Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and oh boy, we're in for a bit of fun today because I have legend, uber wonderful person, Stacey Barr, on the podcast today. And she is the world's leading expert on strategic performance measurement and evidence-based leadership guru. She shows organizations and teams how to develop and measure what matters most. And you'd be surprised what people are measuring and how they're doing it and how they're not doing it that well. She has an international team of professionals who deliver her license program called PUMP, the PUMP methodology, and they run programs around the globe, including Australia, Africa, Canada, USA, UK, and Europe. She's the author of two best-selling books, Practical Performance Measurement, and her latest one, Prove It, How to Create High-Performance Culture and Measurable Success. Welcome, Stace.
Thank you, Zoe. That was like a great big verbal hug. Intro. I love it.
Well, I think we should also let the listeners know that you and I are mates. We've been friends for since 2008, so that's coming on 9 years now. And I have a high degree of respect for your work and use it in my work and refer your work all the time to my clients. And because it has such a big impact on how they do well or not do well in their businesses. And it's a pretty big piece of the puzzle when it comes to business success. So I'm really, really excited to talk to you about some of your work today and get some critical insights for folks listening. So first question for you, legend.
Quit that. You'll make my head big.
Okay, yeah, we don't explode the earphone. Okay, measurement, right? So it's a pretty specialized field, like KPIs. Who would have thought you could make a career out of that? How the heck did you end up here?
A lot of people ask me that question because it is kind of a weird thing to specialize in. And not many people do specialize in measurement, in KPIs. I have to say it might have actually started earlier than where I think it started. I was going to say it starts with school because I was naturally good at maths, never studied for it, and always managed to either top the class or be second top in the class for it. So I took all the advanced maths courses in high school, and I thought, well, natural thing to do at uni is to do more maths. So I did that and majored in pure maths and statistics. So it's not so much that I wouldn't call myself a mathematician per se, but I think there's something about the way you have to think when you are doing maths, like logically and practically, and also a little bit abstractedly, is that a word? And you also need to understand the idea of proof. So I think that really laid the foundation. But coupled with that, and another reason, I guess, why I've ended up in what I'd call an application of maths in the business world, in business performance, is that I love progress, I love achievement, and that's probably something that started in my personality before the realization of being good at maths. So I'm a bit of a goal-oriented nerd, I suppose, in business and in life, and I love practicality. I love making things simpler for people to follow and to make a difference in their lives. So bringing all that together, that kind of means that measuring business performance is like the perfect spot for me to be in.
Well, you certainly would hope that you get progress, achievement, and practical aspects in business. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're just kind of winging it, right?
Yeah, guessing or assuming, hoping, and none of those things satisfy me, and I know none of those things satisfy a lot of people. But I guess not everybody has come to performance measurement in the way I have. So for most people, still feels like a bit of a black box or a little bit scary, I guess, in a way, because you ask around. A lot of people just say, oh, look, I'm not a numbers person. And, you know, I was never really good at maths and I don't really like that kind of stuff. And it's not actually because it's hard. It's just perception that they've sort of grown up with.
Mm. Well, yeah, and I'm thinking, because I'm a creative type, getting down to brass tacks and nitty-gritty has always been a challenge in my business. You know, I'd like much rather play with the big ideas and the fun stuff outdoors in the wilderness with my team than buckle down and do measurement, because that's before I knew what that actually meant. And now that I can tie it back to, are my programs actually doing what they're supposed to be doing? Are people getting what they need out of it? And it helps me be better. Then it's kind of changed my interpretation and interaction with tracking numbers. And I'm hoping that'll help other people too, who are like that, who are love their business, love their work, and the structure of measurement and numbers is something that's evading them. And you know what? That's the ironic thing, is because doing that stuff just makes the rest of it so much better.
It does. There's an author that inspired me early in my career. His name's Dean Spitzer, and he's in the United States. He wrote a book called Transforming Performance Measurement. And in that book somewhere, he says something along the lines of, measurement's the most powerful thing you can do in business because everything else depends on the measurement system. How good everything else happens depends on the measurement system. And it's feedback, you know. How could a human body work without a feedback loop so that, you know, when you put your hand on a hot plate or on a burning match, that your brain knows to pull your arm away? I mean, that's a feedback loop, and measurement has kind of a similar role in business.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, how do you know what you're doing is actually working or is burning your fingers? Yeah, you can burn your finger, you can burn your whole body in half before you go, oh, something's a matter here. And I've been through that, and it's not fun. So I reckon a simple measurement strategy to signal when things are going pear-shaped, oh, that's just to throw another metaphor in there, when things are starting to go on fire, is a really useful and practical thing. So with the measurement stuff, like we were just speaking about this before the podcast started, weird things that people measure. So it's obviously you want to track numbers, some numbers in your business, but let's start with the weird ones. Like, what are some weird stuff you've seen happen?
I started down the self-quantification path, I'm going to say 6 or 8 years ago. And not the typical self-quant stuff where you put a heart rate monitor on to go out for a run and figure out what your average heart rate was and how many calories you burned. Yes, I track those things. And not so much just standing on the scales every day and knowing what you weigh. But I was learning about all this other cool stuff that you can use to track your health and your fitness, like heart rate variability, which is not the same as you know, Zoe. It's not the same as heart rate. Heart rate variability is an indicator of the resilience of your nervous system. So if you have high heart rate variability, you're fit, you're healthy, and your immune system's probably pretty strong. But if you have low heart rate variability, you might be coming down with something, or you're fatigued or jet lagged, or you've overtrained. So that kind of stuff's really useful for me in my line of work, because I love to train hard on my bike, but I travel a lot and I work pretty hard when I'm with clients. So managing those decisions about how to look after myself was great with a measure like that. But you can go even further. You can measure this is a bit gross. I hope nobody gets grossed out by it. But there's a thing called the Bristol Poo Scale. And your poo tells you stuff about how healthy you are. And there's a scale, and you match up a number with a picture. So look in the toilet. Match it up with a number, and people will track daily their Bristol poo scale score. And you know, it's useful. I know it sounds weird and funny, but you know, these things can be quite useful. It gives you a lot more control, or influence at least, over your health and well-being.
Well, that image just kind of harks back to what I have in mind when you talk about looking at your poo. Is back to sort of Middle Ages, when they had the king or queen poo into a dish because they didn't have toilets, and they examined it. The medical practitioner of the time would look at the king's scat and examine it for disturbances in their humors. And I kind of think that's what we do. Like, my naturopath is all about looking at poo as a gauge to what's going on systemically and in the body system, because you know, if things are on the watery end of things, you know, something is not right. And it's a good indicator, you know. How was your poo today? It was in number 4. Oh, thumbs up. Number 7, not so good. So, I think that's an interesting one. So a good scale like that. So yeah, those are pretty weird things to measure. Look, the self-quantification thing is massive. Like, so many apps are coming out about how to track this, that, and the other. For the exact same reasons, I think, that you got into maths or enjoyed maths, is for that sense of progress and achievement and being able to make sound decisions as a result. And I love the HRV example, because when your HRV drops, it's like, it actually gives you permission not to work out.
Yeah.
And sometimes those days are good. It's like, oh, thank God, I don't have to go. And it helps you break out of the cycle of must get up and do this thing when your body really just needs a break. And it's good to have an external feedback mechanism that helps you make those decisions. And I guess it's like that in business, right? It helps you be detached from the activity. Is that what you see happen?
I think that's probably a good word, detached. We can get way too absorbed in activity, in just doing, and thinking that by completing the things that we start out doing, we've succeeded. But there is a logical leap from that to success, from finishing an activity to success. And that leap, that gap, is what measurement fills, so that we can decide whether our actions are better or not. But we can still do some weird measurement in business too, as you know, Zoe. So I think this lack of comfort with measurement, a lack of enough experience and learning in that measurement field, can lead us to measure all kinds of weird things when we think we're doing the right thing, and it ends up being just as useless as measuring nothing.
Well, how do you know you're measuring the wrong thing?
There's a multi-pronged answer to that question.
Oh, okay.
Basically, when the thing you're measuring is not telling you about the goal that you're trying to achieve, or the thing that you're trying to make better or change. So, to illustrate it with an example, one of the ways you can know you're measuring the wrong thing is when the data comes from the wrong place. The data's got bias to it. So a freight client of mine was measuring customer satisfaction, and they wanted me to have a closer look at their customer survey to figure out if they were asking the right questions. And so, you know, I'd had a look at their customer survey, and I asked them, tell me the process. Like, how do you administer this survey? Who do you send it to? And, you know, how do you get the data back? And they said, oh, well, we give it to our account managers. And I said, who are they? And they said, oh, well, they're you know, our people that look after different segments of our customers. So we give the survey to our account managers. And I was expecting them to say, and then our account managers ring up our clients and ask them the questions. But what they actually said to me was, and then the account managers fill it out on behalf of customers, and then we collate the data and we create this customer satisfaction measure.
Right.
They had no clue. It made no sense what they were doing. So I said, so you don't ask your customers? And they said, no, we don't want to bother our customers.
So it's like, yeah, because how do you even know? You just like, they smiled at me, therefore they're happy.
Or the account managers are really concerned about how the data is going to reflect back on them. So if their customers were actually more unhappy than another account manager's customers, then is that account manager going to get performance managed, and is it going to be a problem? And that is that's another way, you know, you're measuring the wrong thing, is when it potentially will drive the wrong behavior. So the account managers would be manufacturing the data to look good so that they weren't put under the spotlight.
Okay, so the data source is questionable, and then it's affecting behavior negatively.
Okay. Not in the way you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that's an interesting one, because often we make decisions in our businesses and we hadn't really thought through the consequences of those decisions, and all of a sudden we have this changed behavior to produce a target result, and yet the behavior is causing a whole bunch more problems. So an example of that is like a business that has revenue targets, and it introduced a punishment scheme. So if you didn't hit your targets, then you would get counseling. And as a result, what happened is that the people who then had these targets put over their head with this punishment scheme started working really, really, really long hours and started being resentful, and it caused culture problems and a bit of self-interest and people stealing work from each other and just to get their numbers up. So that's an example of a decision where you're tracking targets as opposed to results. Actually, that's probably a good question. What's the difference between a target and a result?
I want to add a third word in there. I want to talk about what a result is, what a measure is, and what a target is.
Okay.
So we mix these things up all the time. A result is a verbal statement of a quality or a state you want to achieve. So a good example of a result is our customers are loyal to us. We want that as a result. Another result might be we don't waste any time in the delivery of goods to our customer.
Okay.
A measure is how that result would be quantified so we can monitor the degree to which it's happening. So if we're interested in having customers that are loyal to us, then we'd have to find a way to quantify loyalty. And that might be every time the customer needs a service like ours, they come directly to us first. So what percentage of the time do customers choose us first for this kind of service? And we want to increase that. We would love it to be up around 100%, but maybe at the moment it's only 40%. So we want to improve from where we are to get closer to the 100. That's a long leap though, from 40% to 100%. You know, 100% of the time customers are choosing us first. That's, you know, quite a perfect world. So we might set a target then to get from 40% to 60%. And then we would look at, actually a fourth thing, initiatives. We'd look at, well, what kinds of things can we change in how we do business that would mean that our clients would more often come to us first? And maybe that's about putting more time into the relationship with customers or being clearer about the value that we offer and how it aligns with what our customers need. And if that's clearer and if the relationship's stronger, then we might look at the measure and see that the measure is actually increasing from that 40% and moving closer and closer to our target of 60%.
I love this. I love it because it's reverse engineering the results that you want, and it goes against typical, what I see is typical business planning, which is, what do you want to achieve this year? Oh, let's earn $1 million. You know, they start with a target, and then then they set a budget, and then they figure, oh, maybe we should figure out how we're going to do that, and then they develop strategy. And even if they get to measurement, apart from just the target, and it's all about the goal or the target as opposed to really thinking about the results. So why pick $1 million? Like, what's meaningful about that? And the way that you run your whole system is about understanding the meaning behind what you're doing and then starting with the end in mind. And I love that. Do you find that your clients find that a bit of a mind bend, that they sort of have to reverse engineer things, or do you find that they sort of jump into it naturally?
They don't jump into it naturally. If they did it naturally, then I probably wouldn't have clients. So I've just come back from a couple of days in Sydney with a great client there, and they have never had results-oriented goals, nor have they had any kind of measures, quantifications of their performance or progress. And so all they did have was a set of initiatives that they tried to align to the strategic direction of their company, and they knew this was a problem. I think their VP had read Prove It, that second book of mine that you mentioned earlier, Zoe. And he kind of, like, the lights came on for him, and he said, oh, we need this. All we do is have initiatives. So in the last 2 days, we created results-oriented goals for them and got halfway through the design of measures for them, because they ended up with more goals than they anticipated. But it was an amazing amount of progress. At the end of the workshop, they said that it was easy, it flowed for them, and that this is the first time ever they've understood and had results-oriented goals and measures, and they were very excited about it. You know, they used words like tantalizing and revealing and you know, just that's what the day meant to them. It was really...
Where were you doing that?
Really
yeah, I just imagine you with your feathers teaching your program. It's tantalizing and revealing.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Maybe that could be a future bit of fun, I don't know. But yeah, no feathers. And they struggled with it. It was hard thinking. It was thinking they've never done before. But when you're deliberate about it, and that's what I meant earlier when I said I like making these things practical and deliberate, when there's a process to follow, it does flow, it does feel easy, it does feel revealing, and it's tantalizing because for the first time ever you see how much influence you can have over your performance, the performance of your organization. And they had a list of objectives and suddenly, not objectives, initiatives, actions they were doing, projects, and they got partway through the workshop and it was sort of, we're probably doing a whole lot of stuff that's not going to even impact any of these goals that are, you know, important to us. So good grief, are we wasting money on what we're already doing? So that's the next part of the activity, is to align their initiatives to their new goals and measures to see where there is fit and alignment and where they're wasting time and money and could possibly stop doing things.
I love that. So I love the fact they had such an awakening moment and got on board, because it made their busy work purposeful, or realized they didn't have to do the busy work to be purposeful. So I've got this burning question coming up when you're talking about results-oriented goals. Are there goals that are not results-oriented?
Yeah, actions. A lot of people will write actions as goals. You know, they'll say things like, "We'll implement a new customer relationship management system." They'll think that's a goal. And that's an initiative. It's an action.
Okay.
Or they'll complete the training of all of their staff in safe work practices. That's an initiative. It's an action. It's not a result.
Okay. So if you had a goal, like coming back to the example before, let's say the revenue goal, put in quotation marks, because you could tell me if it's a goal or not, is $1 million. I want to make $1 million in profit this financial year. Is that a target or is that a goal, or are they the same thing?
That's a target. What a goal might look like that would end up with a measure of revenue and a target of $1 million, the goal would be... We need to grow our business. We want to grow our business either in our current market or grow our business in new markets. It could be a simple goal like we want to be more profitable or we want to increase sales, but that would just be the verbal way of writing the goal. The measure then becomes revenue, and the target is $1 million.
Okay. Thank you. That just helped a lot.
Cool.
So results are, I like the fact that you define it as a verbal statement, you know, and I think that's really useful because that sort of tells the story of your business in a way that just numbers doesn't.
You know what? It does. It absolutely does. And in these last 2 days with my client in Sydney, the VP, at one point, he had this great suggestion. He said, okay, now that we've got all our goals listed and we put them in what's called a results map, which links all of the goals together in cause-effect relationships or companion relationships or flags where there might be some conflicts. It kind of links all of the goals together and then aligns them to the whole of company, like high-level vision, mission, strategic goals. And the VP wanted each of his leadership team to stand up and give a one-minute summary of the story of their new strategy. And that was amazing because each of them, even though they used their own words, they were describing exactly the same story of strategy. So those words are really important because that is the way that leadership team are all going to go out to their staff and talk about this strategy for the whole division and help those people understand how they'll contribute to it. The words are really important. They're important first to come up with good measures, but they're important too to make that story of the strategy understandable to everybody.
Mm, I love it. And that's pretty fundamental if you're going to inspire and motivate your team.
Absolutely.
So with all this talk about business and measurement, what do you believe there's anything that businesses must measure? Like there's non-negotiables, every business should be measuring this thing.
Two ways to answer that question, Zoe. Firstly, I think that if they have a goal they intend to achieve, it must be measured. But I know that's not quite the question you're asking. If there was a generic, I think I've got an article on my blog that talks about three or five measures that are worthwhile for everybody to measure if you haven't got goals and you can't figure out what matters. One of them is cycle time. So every business is made up of a collection of processes, the way we do stuff, the way we serve our customers, the way we procure goods and services, the way we recruit and train or develop staff. These are processes. The cycle time of these processes is a really good measure, because to aim to reduce the cycle time means that you are always going to improve the process if you do it really deliberately. Another good measure is rework. Where are we wasting time and effort? That's a great generic measure. Customer satisfaction, of course, or even more so these days, people are moving more to a net promoter score, which is about how likely your customers are to recommend you to a friend or colleague. So they're three pretty generic measures that are useful for just about any business if they've got absolutely no clue where to start.
So I would not have guessed any of those. I was going to revenue and profitability. Would those not be essential ones, do you think? Or tell me about your opinion on that.
They are lag measures, the most lag measures in a sense, and they don't let you, they don't drive improvement action. And you really do want measures to drive improvement action. Now, it could be that if a commercial business really wants to grow its revenue, then certainly it would measure it. And it has to measure its revenue as part of good governance of the company. You know, you've got to know your revenue to properly declare your taxes. So those things are going to be measured as a given, but as performance measures, as measures to drive performance improvement, just to look at your revenue numbers doesn't really give you any insight. But to try and analyze why your cycle time is the way it is, or why you've got so much rework, or why your customers aren't as satisfied or as loyal as you'd like them to be, those things lead to better questions that actually change the fabric of how you do business, which ultimately will result likely in more revenue. More profitability, even better.
Yeah, well, that was just life-changing, what you just said, so I'm pretty excited about that. Rework, I'm like, oh my goodness, where would you start with that? Like, how would you even set about developing a system to measure rework?
You need to think about what types of rework you might want to target first. So a very, very common type of rework or wasted time in an organization is approvals. So when staff aren't given the appropriate accountability, authority, I mean, to do their jobs, they're constantly looking up to management or to supervisors to get permission before they can do something next. Okay. And that time for approvals is a massive waste. So it delays the process, it slows it down, but it also can create rework, because by the time the approval comes back saying, oh, I want you to change this, that's immediate rework, and then another approval is needed after that little change has been made. And most often these approvals aren't necessary. They don't impact on the end outcome.
Okay, I got it. Wow, it's a great place where you can make your business less flabby and more fit.
That's great. That's a great example. It's about the flabbiness. Where are we carrying all this excess effort that isn't contributing to our ultimate outcomes? It's just really holding us down, holding us back.
Love it. Okay, cool. Now I have an excellent metaphor. We've got some really good tips. In terms of, those are some things that you think would be great for any business to measure. Is there anything that should not be measured?
Again, two ways to answer your question. The first is the generic thing, that anything that drives the wrong behavior or just isn't useful should absolutely not be measured, because the effort and cost of time, but also attention, is going to add more waste to your business. It's not going to be useful. Driving the wrong behavior will actually send you backwards, and often that's when we're measuring people's performance that we end up with that problem where we're getting the wrong behavior. We're getting people gaming the measures or gaming the system and not working to improve the result. So in general, if it drives the wrong behavior or it's not useful in achieving your goals, don't measure it. Don't waste your time and effort.
Okay.
But there's one measure that keeps coming up every time I work with people. Number of complaints, you know, how many times customers complain to us. Yeah, that's a really, really common measure because it's easy. Because a lot of companies have a customer complaint system, and it's very easy to go in and count how many there were this week, and compare it to how many there were last week and the week before and the week before, and think that it's telling us something. But I think it's a lazy measure for often what people are trying to know.
Mm-hmm.
And the things they're trying to know is, do customers trust us? Do they respect us? Are customers collaborating well with us? Are customers satisfied with what we do? Are we delivering on time to customers? And you know, that customer complaints measure keeps coming up, and it's not direct evidence of any of those things. The only thing it's direct evidence of is that you have some customers and they want to let you know what they think. It's not even representative of your total customer base, because there'll be plenty of customers that love you and won't let you know, and plenty of customers that are annoyed with the last thing you did for them, but they're not going to complain about it. So it's a lame measure. It doesn't have a lot of power to help us with our decision making, as common as it is.
Okay. So you mentioned measuring people's performance is one of the problems, or can create problems in terms of people gaming the measures. And I know this is a particular bugbear for you. And I'd love to hear your solution to it, because, you know, let's have a performance review and people sort of grit their teeth and get ready to go into their performance review. So tell me, what is your approach to helping people get a sense of acknowledgement in the workplace that traditional performance reviews have served? So what's the problem with measuring people's performance, and what's the alternative?
The problem is the assumption on which it's based. Well, there are a couple of assumptions, but one is that the assumption that the sum of the people's performance equals the organization's overall performance. Just a mathematical equation. And it's a false equation. That equation does not describe how organizations work at all. The performance of the organization is not the sum of the individual people's performance. The performance of the organization is actually in the product of the collaboration of people with each other, following the right processes, and that's what causes organizational performance. And performance reviews do nothing to support that. In fact, with performance reviews, because individual people are being measured and their performance being managed, it creates a few, I guess they're kind of psychological dynamics in people. One is this feeling of competition, that if they're being measured and their colleagues are being measured, like the account managers we mentioned before, if they all know they're being measured, that means one of them's going to rise to the top of the ranking and one of them's going to be at the bottom and everyone else is going to be distributed in between. And that's not helpful. That competitive feeling is not what we want between colleagues. We want collaboration between colleagues. The other psychological dynamic is fear, because when someone's measured, it's a threat. You know, I'm trying to work out if you're good enough or not. And if you're not good enough, something's going to happen. And people don't like that feeling, and it causes defensiveness. And coupled with that is just this whole idea that for somebody to think that they can sum up a person's performance by a few usually, almost always, poorly designed performance measures is so undignifying. There's no way to dignify a person and to empower them and to put them into a collaborative, creative, committed kind of mindset when you're saying that their performance as a person can be summed up by a few trivial numbers. So I hate it for all of those reasons. And I have a very tall soapbox to do this. I believe that we should never measure people's performance.
Right. So what's the alternative then? So, you know, for individual recognition, and people like to know they've done a good job and they get a sense of meaningful progress in the work that they do, and they feel like they're making a meaningful contribution. How do you achieve that, those needs, if you're not measuring their performance?
In part, you take the numbers right away from the people and put them on the results that teams produce together, or put them on results that a business process produces, and the people that work in that business process then have those measures as a tool in their hand, something to inform them, something to help them, something to give them satisfaction when they see that they're making progress, and never use them as a rod for people's backs. So that reframe of how measures can be helpful in giving people that sense of progress is that, yeah, they've got to be a tool in their hand, not a rod for their back. Now, on the other side of it, how else do you help people feel like they're making a meaningful contribution? How do you help them self-actualize and improve as people and improve in their roles in the organization? I'm not even going to comment on it because I'm not an expert in it, and I think to think that you just need measurement to manage people's performance means that you're ignoring this vast body of knowledge about how to help people have meaningful contributions and meaningful meaningful return from the work they do. That's just not my bag at all, I think. I think we need to go to experts to really understand that. Like Daniel Pink and his book Drive, I mean, he touches on some of it in that.
Okay. Because I guess behind all of this is a simpler question. How do you, if we're not measuring performance, people's performance, and there's no yardstick because it can be a rod for their back, how you get the opportunity to get a gold star? And it's your gold star, not your team's gold star. Is that even possible?
Well, it probably is possible, for sure. Do people really want gold stars, I think is the question that I would ask. I'm not...
Let me just re-qualify that. Some people are all about getting gold stars, and some people couldn't give a damn. And it's a lot of it's personality driven and what's important to the individual. So for some people, that kind of recognition is significant motivation. For others, it's like, doesn't mean a thing. So case in point, my husband could not give a toss about gold star or status. Like, really? It's not a motivator. Whereas for me, yes, it is. And it's just the way that we're wired and the way that we evolved into who we are.
The status would have, for me in that case, because I understand that I have an achievement ethic as well. I guess I'll just reflect on what a gold star means to me. I don't need it given to me by somebody else. I want the status, not the status, I want the achievement. I want to feel like I'm moving forward in achievement on things that matter to me, on goals that I've set for myself. So maybe that's there's a clue there, is that for the gold star oriented people in a company, I don't see any problem at all with them deciding what their personal goals might be, either for contributing to the organization or for learning and growing and developing. But they set those goals in the same way that we've set business or team goals, and they decide how to measure those goals, and they track them for their own purpose only. So the measure is still a tool in their hand. It's not something that they then hand to the manager and say, manager, you can whip me over the back with this until you think I've earned a gold star. So that I guess that would be probably, it's like the self-quantification thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I love it. That was just a kind of a ping moment. So I'll just savoring that for a moment. That was excellent. So the solution then is for the individual to determine what their result is that's meaningful to them, and then to develop measures that are going to work towards that. And it could be in a collaboration, could be on an individual effort basis. And they work in tandem or hand in hand with their manager in support around that. This could work for the gold stars, the gold star hungry people.
Cool.
All right. This is like the subtitle of your second book, Prove It, is How to Build a High Performance Culture. What does that look like in practical terms to you? How do you see that looking?
It has a few qualities to it. One of the most important qualities is, like, ultimately a high performance culture is one that drives their organization to high performance, which means that the organization routinely achieves meaningful targets. In other words, it's been clear about what its purpose is for existing. Mm-hmm. So it's written that in results-oriented language. Mm-hmm. It's measured the fulfillment of its purpose, like how well it's fulfilling that purpose, and it's set targets for how much it wants to get better at that. And a high-performance organization is one step further, which is, and they're actually reaching those targets. And they're reaching those targets easier and easier as time goes by. So any change they make to themselves to fulfill their purpose better has a high return on investment. So ultimately, that's what a high-performance organization is, and a high-performance organization can't be high-performance without a high-performance culture. And that culture has a lot of collaboration, collaboration in particular across the white space on the organizational chart between the silos. So cross-team collaboration, teams that might work in six different departments, but they all work or contribute to the same cross-functional business process, so they collaborate regularly to make that business process flow really beautifully. There definitely is a different definition of accountability in a high-performance culture, and it's not about hitting personal performance targets like we've just been talking about. Accountability is about how well people monitor the goals and results that really matter, how validly they interpret what the measures are telling them about those goals and results, and how quickly and discerningly they initiate improvement action only when that action's needed, and then pulling the team together that's going to help improve that area of performance and carry that action out. So that to me is what accountability is about. If people aren't doing those things, they're not really doing their job. They can't just turn up and do a task list each day. They have to turn up knowing that there are tasks to do, but being committed to why they're doing those tasks and to the impact and how well those tasks are working and contributing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm just taking 1,000 notes as you're talking. Can't just do a task list each day. You got to know why you're doing it and that, what's meaningful about it. And it's all tied back to results and the improvement processes. I love that.
Yeah. And the fulfillment of the organization's purpose. So everybody in a high-performance culture has a clear line of sight from what they're trying to achieve through their role, through their role in a team, and all the way through to the purpose. They can describe how they are ultimately contributing to the purpose of the organization.
That's awesome. So if I'm a CEO or I'm a business owner and I'm sitting at like, where do I start with getting my performance measurement mojo happening? What's the first thing they ought to do? Where could they start to have an assessment about what's going on and how can they improve it?
Can I give you 3 steps?
Okay. Yep.
Because I think they're important. I think with the 3 steps, you'll get the momentum to carry on with it rather than just start it, put your toe in the water and then forget about it and do something else. The first step might sound easy, but it's actually a lot harder than it sounds. And that is simply to make the decision to be an evidence-based leader. It sounds simple, but the consequences of deciding to be an evidence-based leader is that you have to be transparent and accountable for the true results of the organization. You have to really know what's going on, even if the news is bad. Now, in Hard Facts, Dangerous Half-Truths and Total Nonsense, which is a book by Pfeffer and Sutton, they say that there's the decision is basically you're either deciding to be told you're always right, or you're deciding to really know what matters and what's not working and actively improve the organization, and you can't do both. So if you're a CEO and all you get is good news from your staff, it's probably because they believe you've made the first decision, that you only want to be told that you're right. You don't want to know what's really going on so you can make the right decisions to improve things. So it's a hard decision to make because it's quite a revealing, exposing kind of state to be in an evidence-based leader.
What's the name of that book? Hard Truths?
Hard Facts.
Oh, Hard Facts.
Hard Facts.
Yeah.
Dangerous Half-Truths.
Yeah.
And Total Nonsense.
What a great book title.
Yeah, it's cool.
Awesome. All right, thanks for that. I'll put a link for that in the show notes, which will be at zoerauth.com/podcast/prove-it. So that's where you can find all the notes. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so that's step 2. What's step 2?
Make sure your strategic goals for the company are clear and measurable. And that means fundamentally that they're results oriented and you do not use weasel words when you write them.
Okay, what's an example of a weasel word?
Efficient, effective, capacity, sustaining, sustainable, productive, quality, reliable. All of those kinds of words that sound really professional. We also call them management speak or management jargon. And the problem with them is that they don't say anything specific, so everybody can draw different interpretations of it. If you've got everybody in your company with a different interpretation of what your strategic direction is, that strategic direction will be impossible to achieve because everybody will be going in random different directions based on their interpretation of it.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
And it won't be measurable.
Yeah, okay. Got it. So what's step 3?
treat measurement deliberately. Don't think that it's just something that you do in a brainstorming session. You don't just brainstorm some KPIs or measures. Measurement is a deliberate process. And for all of those people that feel they're not numbers people and the KPIs have never been useful in the past and they don't really see any good examples of it and they've only ever had bad measures, it's only because you didn't take a deliberate approach to it. So being deliberate, doing some education, some learning around how good measurement happens, that is an important commitment because measurement is at the center of all of this, of proving it, of being an evidence-based leader, of having a high-performance organization. Measurement's the gravity that holds all of that together. So it has to be done well for the whole thing to work.
Okay. Awesome. I think that's the part that I struggle with the most is probably treating it deliberately as opposed to like yet another thing on the task list. And I think it probably comes back to the root problem of have I got my results defined correctly and that are meaningful and developing the right measures. And not too many measures, right? Like I think that's another thing. Like you can get excited about the potential of what all this could mean and then have too many. Is there an ideal number of measures?
Yes, kind of. If you have six strategic goals for your company, then each of those strategic goals is likely going to have one or two measures for it. So that's a good balance, a good ratio is for a goal, you'll want one, maybe two measures for it. But if you're an executive team of, let's say, five people and you've got 23 goals, you've overdone it because you're going to have close to 40 or 50 measures. And for a team of five leaders to try and monitor all of that and interpret all of that and initiate action to improve all of that, it's overwhelming. So being ruthless is very, very important. I would say the best guideline is go for the fewest possible measures you can manage. It's kind of like when you're trying to lose weight, you eat as little as you can without being constantly hungry and dizzy and lightheaded. You're sort of aiming for that sweet spot with the measures as well, as few measures as you can get away with.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Stacey, I could keep talking to you for hours. I love this stuff. I love your work. It's enlightening and so exciting because it just helps someone like me who's like, oh, look at the next shiny object, just drill down into what matters. And I love that that's part of your whole business framing. So I want to say thank you. If you want to find Stacey, you can have a look at her site, stacybarr.com, and that's spelled STACEYBARR.com. And it will be a link on the show notes for her site and for her books and for the books that she mentioned today. So, Stace, thank you so much.
It's always fun doing things with you. So thank you very much for the opportunity to stand on my soapbox another time.
Oh, yeah, it was worth it. Thanks.